Thank you. Good morning. Oh, am I very loud as well? Have I got my teenager voice, mum's voice on? Good morning. It was really great to hear Beth just encourage everyone to get to know our children. You know, so often we think about our faith as being our faith. It is just between us and God. But we don't actually have our faith in silos. We're part of a community. We're part of a congregation. We're part of a worldwide church. And we all impact each other. So that was really cool to hear. We've got great kids. Go and get to know them. I know these three. One, two. The other one's out with some other kids. It is Transfiguration Sunday this Sunday. So this is a very holy day in our church calendar. So we're taking a break from our series on the Lord's Prayer again. Sorry for those who thought that they would be getting the next installment. If you come next Sunday, Beth is picking up our series on the Lord's Prayer. And I've been enjoying listening to everybody's voices, so I hope you have too. Today, though, we're going to talk about mountain highs. And I'm going to start with a question, which is probably going to be a post or a pre-COVID answer, and that is, who has ever thought having a cruise would be a great idea? So, pre-COVID, I would have thought, you know, the Bahamas Mediterranean sounded pretty good. Post-COVID, yeah, not so much. Anyway, there was a magician, and he was a magician on a cruise ship. And he'd been a magician on this cruise ship for very many years. And because the audience came and went all the time, he had the most amazing life. He didn't have to worry about getting new material for his shows because there was a new audience all the time. So life was pretty sweet. He spent his time on the sun deck, getting nice and suntanned. He made use of those buffets. It was amazing. But then, one day, the captain went ashore and came back with a new pet. And it must have been the Bahamas because it was a big parrot. And this parrot went everywhere with the captain. So every night, this parrot came to the magician's show. And not only was this parrot beautiful, but it was pretty smart. And so pretty, you can see where this is going, pretty soon this parrot knew all the tricks. And so as this magician was doing the tricks, you would hear this, "It's up his sleeve," coming from the audience, or "It's not his real hat, it's in his shoe." So the magician suddenly had to start making new material. Life actually got quite hard and busy for this magician. You can imagine the animosity with this parrot, because this parrot was pretty smart and he would very quickly pick up the tricks and tell the whole audience what was going to happen next. So this magician would eye this parrot, but because it was the captain's parrot, he couldn't just grab it and weigh it down and throw it overboard. What would happen? But one night, there was a huge explosion in the boiler room. Huge explosion. Within minutes, the ship sank. No imaginary people were harmed in the telling of this story. The ship sank. Miraculously, the magician found himself clinging to the end of a plank, and he clung on all night. And in the morning, as the sun rose, he started to look around him to see, you know, where he was. Were there other people there? What he did see was the parrot on the other end of the wood. And they just stared at each other. They stared off at each other for one day, for 2 days. Third day, just staring at each other. And the fourth day, the parrot broke and said, "Okay, I give up. What did you do with the ship?" It can be really hard to make sense of what is going on when we have a very narrow view of a situation. And sometimes as Christians, when we have a very narrow view of what is happening, whether it's out of the ordinary or not, it can be really difficult to find our way ahead. You know, we're so consumed with making sense of it in a very narrow focus. And normally our context, not anybody else's, this is our context we're looking in, it can be so hard to figure out what is really going on. So just like this parrot, his context was the magic show. He had no frame of reference to think about a big explosion in that boiler room. But likewise, when we are thinking about, helps if I turn it on. When we're thinking about the things that are supernatural, it can be really hard to make reason of them. Now, super, just it's a prefix, it means over and above, more than normal, like a superstar, a supermarket. And when we keep a very, very small, narrow focus, it can be really hard to make sense of these supernatural, these out of the ordinary events that take place. We need to broaden our context. So today is Transfiguration Sunday, and I think the Transfiguration certainly puts itself in that supernatural context. It is out of the ordinary. And today we're going to broaden the context and not just look at the Transfiguration in its own right, but we're going to look at where it sits within the life and ministry of Christ. And so we're going to read about it from Matthew 17, verses 1 to 8. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. And just then, there appeared before them Moses and Elijah, talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you wish, I'll put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." And while he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." And when the disciples heard this, When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said. "Don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. So this really is a very strange event, the Transfiguration. And the Greek word here is metamorpho, and it means to transform, literally or figuratively, to change from one form into another. You know, many people have made the case with the Transfiguration of Christ that it means the inside of him matched the outside. You know, Christ's divine nature was veiled somewhat by his earthly form, and this was a lifting of that veil. How different is that to us? I kind of think we tend to keep making sure that our outward doesn't reflect our inward, that we keep on our masks. But although the Transfiguration is very strange, that gives it great testimony to the fact that it actually happened. Because we find within these eyewitness accounts that we find in the Gospels just some unbecomingly intimate statements. And these statements assure most biblical scholars that these things actually happened. Because the information contained in here doesn't put people in a great light. This one certainly has one of those statements about Peter. Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up 3 shelters, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. He did not know what to say. They were so frightened. So once again, we have Peter kind of running his mouth off before his little grey cells kind of kicked into gear. He did have some. But again, he definitely, his frontal lobe certainly didn't kind of activate that fast, did it? You know, I find coming back into New Zealand that New Zealanders are very self-deprecating. We will put ourselves down, possibly before other people chop us off. But it's a very New Zealand thing. A lot of other cultures don't do this. And when we read through the Gospels, in fact, when we read through the Bible, we have our cultural goggles on. So we don't kind of see that this is quite odd. Within the Middle Eastern context that this was written in, this would have been absolutely rude to someone who was one of the first fathers of our modern church. And this is why we think it actually happened. These guys were so interested in getting the truth out there that they didn't mind losing face and losing honour. In fact, this one's from Matthew. If you go through and read it in Mark, scholars think that is so accurate that it actually is just coming from Peter's mouth himself. This extraordinary event on the Mount, though, this transfiguration, is like a bookend to a season. And at the beginning of the season, and the season is Epiphany, we have the baptism of Christ. Where we are today, the end of the Epiphany, which is the season where we are, where Christ is made fully known, especially to the Gentile church, we have this. And we hear from God at both events. And the words that we hear from God are quite similar. When we read from Matthew, the word said at the baptism, and a voice from heaven said, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." And then the transfiguration, "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." Now, there are two main instructions that we get when we read through this transfiguration passage. One from God, one from Jesus. God speaks first with these same words that we heard earlier at Jesus' baptism. "This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased." These words really serve as a reminder of Christ's identity. God's making a point here. But in the transfiguration, God adds three simple words. Listen to him. You know, there's been much written about the appearance of Moses and Elijah on that mountain, that they represent both the law and the prophets. But God's voice from heaven, "Listen to him," clearly showed his disciples and us that the law and the prophets must give way to Christ. He's not equal with the law. He is not equal with the prophets. He came as the fulfillment of the law, the fulfillment of the prophecies in the Old Testament. And I don't think that it's insignificant that these words come while Peter is still speaking. It says while he was still speaking, the cloud came down. And I love the way that Matthew sneaks that in here. Because this is the same Peter that just a week ago was being rebuked by Christ. You know, "Get behind me, Satan." As Jesus was telling the disciples what would happen to the Christ, that he would die and be raised, and Peter called him away to rebuke him. This is the same guy. But God didn't wait for Peter to get carried away, he cut in. And in those three words, listen to him, God tells us what we do, or what we can all do when we get caught in this whirlwind of life, when we get caught in a whirlwind of transition, when it all gets a bit much, when it all gets a bit overwhelming, what do? Listen to him. Listen to Jesus. It's quite simple. When we're in a place where we have no reference point, yeah, it's quite simple, isn't it? You're preaching on how to do that later on in the year. When we get to a place where we have no reference point, when we can't make any sense of what is going on, listen to Jesus. You know, we live in an age that just bombards us with information. We get information from the moment, well, probably before we put our feet on the ground, we grab our little phones out and figure out what's been happening in the news. And I find it slightly ironic that with all of this information, we're really getting less and less good at really listening to it, sifting through it, and making sense of it. Because listening takes time. Listening takes patience. It takes discernment. It takes intention. We just want to keep on doing. We've got so much to do, so we'll just get started. But God's words are for us today. Listen to him. And I think one of the other reasons that God said those words was that he knew what was coming. Because we know that Christ and those three disciples did not stay on that mountaintop. And as Christ came down that mountainside, the plains would have been before him. And he would have known that this next stage of the journey was to Jerusalem. And those words, listen to him, would reinforce what the disciples were to do in those next coming weeks. Listen to him. Do what it says, do what he says, even when it makes no sense. Peter, go fishing, and the first fish you catch will have some coins in its mouth. Go take the coins, pay off the temple taxes. What? And then the voice comes into his memory, the voice from the cloud. Listen to him. As they go about their travels with the rest of the disciples, and Jesus finally shares what's going to be happening when they get to Jerusalem. I'm not sure what they were expecting, whether it was going to be 2 weeks in a highway inn having a great time. But he says, no, the Son of Man will be killed. And he will raise again in 3 days. What? But Peter is silent this time. This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. There's no repeat of Peter rebuking Jesus for what he thinks is a horrible thing about to happen. So you see, we need to be careful about how we view these mountaintop experiences. You know, it can be incredibly life-changing being up on a mountain and viewing down, hearing from God. You know, I've never had an experience where I've been on a mountain and I've heard God's voice coming out from a cloud. But I have known times where I've heard from God. Not necessarily that audible voice, but that God has spoken to me directly somehow. And it can get giddy. You want to stay there in that moment, just as Peter did. Oh, it's good to be here. Let me build 3 shelters. No, but we don't live on mountaintops. We tend to go there to visit. And we need to descend into those valleys and plains where most of our life is actually lived out. And I've found that from those mountaintop experiences that I've had, that actually they've come to prepare me for what is coming next. So I said earlier that the baptism of Jesus was one bookend for the start of the Epiphany season, and the transfiguration was kind of the set end to the season of Epiphany. But we can really look at this as a set of three, not a set of two. You know, when we don't look at the mountaintop experiences, we're a little bit like that parrot and we have a very narrow view of what's happening. When we don't open our focus, we can actually lose some of the lessons and some of the encouragement at what is happening and what we are about to go through. Because this season that we are about to enter into, Lent, ends with another mountain of sorts too, the hill of Calvary, where Christ was hung on a cross. It's a very different scene to this amazing sight on the Mount of Transfiguration. N.T. Wright writes about this tension. He says, "On a mountain is Jesus revealed in glory. And there, on a hill outside Jerusalem, is Jesus revealed in shame. Here his clothes are shining white, and there they've been stripped off, and soldiers have gambled for them. Here he's flanked by Moses and Elijah, and here by a couple of brigands, representing, the level to which Israel has sunk in rebellion against God. Here we have a bright cloud overshadowing everything. And here, darkness falls upon the land. Here we have Peter blurting out, 'Oh, this is wonderful. It's good to be here.' And over here, he's not to be seen. He's hiding in the shadows, denying his knowledge of Christ. Here there is a voice from God coming out of the clouds, 'This is my son.' And over here we have a pagan soldier declaring, 'This really was God's son.' And we look at the transfiguration of Jesus in this way, when we open our focus, it feels a little bit like riding a roller coaster. Well, it did to me as I was preparing for this during the week. We experience this giddying height, Christ transformed, his earthly body transfigured. And just as we're enjoying that view, we're lost in worship, we're lost in all, and we want to stay here. This roller coaster we're on gives way to the devastating side of the cross. And I think this mountaintop experience wasn't meant to be looked at by itself. It's part of a preparation that started before creation. And at that time when the disciples were about to head into the deepest descent of all, God and Jesus both sought to equip and to comfort. "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." And then what did Jesus do and say? In verse 7, "But Jesus came and touched them. 'Get up,' he said. 'Don't be afraid. This is my son whom I love. Listen to him. Get up and don't be afraid.'" Because these words both help us refocus and they give us encouragement for today. You know, God tells us, "Listen to Jesus." And Jesus says, "Get up. Pick up your mat. You can do this. We've got you covered." You know, if I'd been on that mountaintop that day, I know that I wouldn't forget. And we have these wonderful accounts from in John and in 2 Peter where they write about this experience. I had it here to read, but I won't do that. If you want to know where the verses are, come and see me. But as we're about to enter into the season of Lent, you know, we have to commit to doing what the season is about, to refocusing, returning to Christ, repenting, listening and discerning to what he is saying, seeking that comfort that he is reaching out to give, and getting back in there, into the fray, which is our relationships, our marriages, our work, our school, wherever we find ourselves. You know, there is nothing that we have done that Christ is not able to reach out and touch and say, get up. You can do this. Off you go. We've got you. You know, the Transfiguration is this absolutely strange, supernatural occurrence. But it isn't just that. It's a place of equipping. It's a place of offering us grounding and comfort, encouragement, so that as we do go back out into the fray, and it all gets a little bit overwhelming, we remember our mountaintop experience and we remember what we're told to do. Listen to him. And Christ saying, get up. Don't just sit there. Don't just think it's all over. Get up. Coming into a season of repentance. Get up. You can do it. We're not going to be off this roller coaster of life for a while, as far as I'm aware. But we have comforting reassurance of Christ. We've got these words. We have his presence to get us through. Can you lead us in worship?